here on this Tuesday, December 11th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me here for this Tuesday edition of the program. Brian Blessing will join us to start things off here today. We'll chat some NFL, some NHL, and some college football with him. Second half of today's show, no Rolf Michaels today. Unfortunately, unable to join us here this week. So we'll be joined by Philip Rossman Reich from OrlandoMagicDaily.com. We'll chat with him about the NBA. We'll get some association talk here on today's show. We haven't talked too much NBA here on the program. So with a limited number of college football games coming up here this weekend, we'll try to get some NBA stuff on today's show. So we'll do that with Philip in what should be a great segment, chatting with him about the Eastern Conference playoff picture. Obviously, we're only about a quarter of the way through the season, but without LeBron, very interesting now in the Eastern Conference. And we'll also try to figure out what's wrong with the Houston Rockets. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. All 39 bowl games, FBS bowl games anyway, previewed over there at the website. Our cast of writers did a fantastic job with those. Definitely make sure that you check those out. Also, take a look at Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks. He's been having a great run here so far this season. You don't want to miss a single day of those. NBA, NHL, college basketball, situational betting articles, also posted over there at the website. And if you go check out our YouTube page, go to youtube.com, Bang the Book. You'll find videos from Brian Blessing here later today or early tomorrow. But you'll also find that I'm doing some videos over there. So you can confirm the fact that I have a face for radio, but doing some videos over there on our Bang the Book YouTube page. Today will be my Tuesday three-pack article with my three favorite plays of the night. Wednesday, I'll do a Wednesday weekend look ahead, a Thursday three-pack coming up on Thursdays. Then we'll do something a little bit fun and lighthearted for Friday. So make sure you check out our YouTube page over there and see everything that we've got going on. We got two guests coming your way on today's program. The first one is Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How you doing, buddy?
Doing very well. Appreciate your time as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. A busy time of the year, to be sure. We'll talk some NFL here today, NHL, and then also the college football bowl season with you a little bit. Let's start in the NFL here, Brian. And something I want to touch on regarding last weekend and something I talked about with Joe Everett on yesterday's show is that, a lot of these teams that we expected to be quitters or maybe not give much of an effort really stepped up. The Jets, who we'll talk about here in a little bit, beating the Buffalo Bills. We saw Cincinnati hang within the number against the Chargers the whole game. Detroit goes out on the road and wins in impressive fashion over Arizona. And then, of course, Oakland outright. I'm starting to think that maybe we kind of overblow this idea that NFL teams are just not going to show up.
They're playing for jobs, bud. I mean, the bottom line is, fan bases can look at draft picks and, rebuilding and always start looking to the mock drafts and things of that nature. But the guys that are on the team now, it's survival of the fittest. They're playing for jobs. They're trying to impress could be a new coach coming in or a new GM or showcasing themselves around the league because, some teams are ready to blow things up. At the end of the day, I mean, that's the bottom line. They're playing for jobs.
Yeah, they are. And, another thing, too, and we kind of talked about this a little bit here the last couple of weeks on Bang the Book Radio, if you don't go out there in the NFL and play 100%, you're going to get yourself hurt. So that's also a consideration, too. I mean, in the NBA, we know that tanking runs rampant. It's really not as big of sandbagging a little bit on special teams or whatever. But, really the NBA is the only league, I think, where teams just openly tank and just openly don't give an effort. So I think it's important to keep in mind here over the last 3 weeks of the NFL season where, there are some teams that you probably don't want to touch, but the reasons why you don't want to touch them may not be as accurate as you thought.
I mean, I would cite the Bills-Jets game this weekend, a perfect example of that. Obviously, both teams aren't going anywhere this year. It's about building for the future. But the Jets got absolutely decimated by the Bills a few weeks ago. I mean, Matt Barkley came off the street and beat them like a drum. And they talked all week long. They said it's personal. They embarrassed us. We don't like them. They don't like us. And to the Jets' credit, I mean, they showed up. They looked like they were about to get rolled and blown out, but they hung in there, and they showed a lot of fight. I mean, you know, it's a team that's going nowhere. And know this, in the final stages of the month here, we're going to be getting all these rematches in the revenge scenario and the familiarity of division games. So, I mean, there'll be even some teams that are out of this, there'll be some intensity because they're division games and these teams honestly don't like each other.
Well, speaking of division games, the best game on the board here for week 15 is Thursday night. You know, the NFL's decided, hey, we want to put division games out there. Maybe it's to help the players because of the familiarity and usually the shorter travel than what we see here on Thursday. But I think it's also just the fact that, you know, they really want, you know, the fan base is invested in these Thursday night games, and this is one to be invested in. Chargers, Chiefs. Chiefs, a 3.5-point favorite. There are some threes with very heavy juice out there, but predominantly 3.5 in the market. Total of 53 for this one. Brian, I got to say, given the injury situations for both of these teams and the fact that it's the best game of the week, it's a damn shame that it's a Thursday night game.
Well, we spent a good 15, 20 minutes on this yesterday on Sportsbook Radio. You know, the old money grab, right? I think the Thursday night thing, Fox came in and, you know, bought into Thursday night, kind of saved the thing, and there was all the carping and moaning from the players and safety and playing on Thursday night. But this is just wrong. I mean, now I know you don't know at the beginning of the year who's going to be good for the most part. I mean, these Thursday night things, they have got to find a way that there's a level playing field. If it's teams always coming off a bye to play on Thursday night, whatever it is. Andy Isco, who was on the show yesterday, brought up a good point. Maybe you do a bunch of Thursdays, but then maybe you actually do more of the Monday doubleheaders at the end. It's just ridiculous that a game of this importance, that literally San Diego, and they can win the game, but San Diego's getting thrown to the wolves. I mean, the road team on Thursday night literally plays a game on Sunday. They're in the ice tub on Monday. They do a walkthrough on Tuesday, and then they travel to the venue. I mean, these games are just too big, and I don't think in December that the Thursday night thing – you know, should be, you know, have such an impact on possibly what playoffs, who makes the playoffs, what the seeding may be. I think you're throwing San Diego kind of the wolves here, and I just think it's misguided. The other thing I will say this: we try to do this on Tuesdays, Adam, and what do we always talk about? Trying to be smart, try to look down the road. I'm an idiot. I mean, to the nth degree that Cincinnati's running for the bus. Bill's the quarterback. They're going out to play the Chargers. And to everything I just talked about for 3 minutes, doesn't it stand to reason that the Chargers, even though they know you can't take somebody lightly, but wouldn't you believe that the Chargers invested probably as much time getting ready for the Chiefs game last week as they did getting ready for the Cincinnati game? And they're sitting there laying 14 on a road. In retrospect, I'm sitting there yesterday going, you're a moron, man. I mean, Cincinnati might have been the gift of our lifetime, and I didn't even see it.
Well, I mean, I can't say anything because I actually wound up taking the Chargers in the Super Contest because I just figured – I figured Cincinnati was done. After the embarrassing performance at home against Denver, after losing A.J. Green for the season, you know, obviously they're without Andy Dalton, I just figured they'd be completely done because – I think this Bengals team is also ready to move on from Marvin Lewis. I think they like him as a person, but I think they also realize, right. But I think that they also realize that, you know, this guy's not going to get us anywhere. And of course now they bring Hugh Jackson back in, and I hope for Bengals fans, they don't make that mistake and make him the head coach. But I felt like Cincinnati would completely mail that game in. I knew I was taking a chance with the Chargers being in the penultimate look ahead spot, but you know, as it turned out, you know, they never came close to covering that number. And I agree with you that they probably did put as much into the game plan for this Chiefs game as they did the Bengals game. The one thing that's nice for them is that they're not on the playoff bubble. I mean, at this point, they're basically in. It would take a catastrophic collapse and a bunch of stuff going wrong for them not to get in. But it is crucial if you can get that bye week there and skip that wild card game. It is crucial to try to win your division, and now they're really up against it. But I will say this, Brian. You look at this line out there. You consider Chargers basically going two-thirds of the way across the country, traveling across two time zones on a short week to take on a Kansas City team that has one of the best home field advantages in the NFL. And this line, through all of that, is only 3.5. The Chargers are getting a ton of respect in the market.
A ton of respect. I mean, I literally, this number, I'm not grabbing onto this number at all. I think Kansas City, Arrowhead, to me, is Arrowhead and Seattle are the two biggest home field advantages in the NFL. They're worth 3.5-4 points. So you're telling me on a neutral field this is a pick 'em game? That's what they're telling you. I don't get it. I sometimes the number tells you something. Oh, by the way, real quick, back to Sunday, just in terms of maybe being able to apply some of these things down the road, compound the fact that in the early game, Baltimore had Kansas City beat, and you don't think the Chargers were paying attention to that score, and then all of a sudden Baltimore let the game get away, and then the Chargers had to go out and play. If Baltimore would have beat Kansas City, I bet you your Chargers pick would have been the right pick, because all of a sudden they would have said, wow, look at this, the door's open. I bet you in a weird way the result of that first game also took the air out of the balloon for the Chargers.
Yeah, I think so too. And that may be something that we see here over the next 3 weeks in the NFL, and most definitely week 16 and 17, because we've got so many teams on that playoff bubble. And I know that they try to start all the games there in week 17 at a similar time and all that kind of thing, but it doesn't always work out from a logistical standpoint. So that is something you definitely want to keep in mind here. By the way, I ran this query over at killersports.com. I've got a very good database over there. I was astonished to see, I triple checked this, but teams coming off of an overtime game since the start of the 2015 season are just 43-73 against the spread the next week. So Kansas City in that spot here this week, teams coming off of a win, 23-32, teams coming off of a loss, just 18-35. So, it's one of those things where it's been very difficult for teams to come off of time games. You have Kansas City on a short week off of an overtime game. So, man, I'll tell you what, this is one of those games where this, just because it's a standalone game, you don't have to bet it. I think the context clues in the line tell us that maybe the Chargers are the right side and maybe the Chargers are as good as Kansas City. But situationally, it's a really bad spot, obviously, for the road team.
Oh, it's a horrible spot. And again, the number sometimes is like, well, it's like, what do they know? We don't know. But there, some of these teams, they do get a lot of respect on a week-to-week basis in terms of the respect from the odds makers. But listen, they're putting a number up, and then the market will decide it. I mean, I for the life of me, I don't know, but I can't see three popping up. There's actually one or two of them out there. 3 -25. I mean, I'd be betting that real quick. Would you think a common sense kind of thing? You're seeing 3.5 minus a dime. I got to believe when we get closer to kickoff, people are going to start talking about the stuff we're talking about. Come on, it's a short week, yada, yada, yada. Now, the Baltimore game is a hard-fought physical game, and they expended a lot of energy. But I got to believe this number gets to 4, maybe 4.5.
Yeah, I mean, I would think for sure at some of the more public shops that are out there, stations out there for you, Bovada, MyBookie, and the offshore market, 4 would not surprise me at all. I'd be curious to see if places like Pinnacle or the Greek would make the jump up to 4. I don't know. But it pisses me off to no end that, the NFL, there are a lot of optics problems with the NFL between all the, domestic assault suspensions and, all the things that go on here in this league. At least they've kind of done away with the targeting and some of the bad hits here for the most part this season. But I just don't know how you put yourself in a situation to have this game on a Thursday night in week 15. Like, when you're looking at the schedule here, I mean, Denver was not going to be a contender. Oakland was not going to be a contender. It's a mistake. And the problem is, too, you can flex a game from, 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. on a Sunday, But there is no way in hell you can take a team playing on a Sunday and tell them, hey, you suck. You're going to play on Thursday night. So it's such a it's not a good look at all. And when this game doesn't live up to expectations, it's going to look worse.
On paper, I think coming in, it would have been reasonable to say that if it was going to be Kansas City 1, San Diego 2, Raiders had a lot of work to do. Denver's, kind of middle tier. Coming into the beginning of the season, I don't think it probably was most people's projections. KC 1, San Diego 2, maybe not as close as it is now. San Diego. I can't get out of my head. The Chargers. Right on paper, wouldn't you have thought, they're probably the top two teams of the AFC West. Yeah, week 15, let's throw them on a Thursday night game. I mean, even just reading the tea leaves here, it's even more egregious.
Yeah, it really is. I don't get it, and I really hope that they put something in place next year to, hopefully not run into this situation. And I agree with you, too. I mean, about giving the Monday night doubleheader, play an early game and a late game, I think that makes a whole hell of a lot of sense, especially if you're going to be playing on Saturdays now, too, which we've got two Saturday games here this week. So we got four teams on short rest here this week playing on Saturday. Two of them have some shot at the playoffs, although after how Denver looked last week, not so sure about that. But the first game here, game 303-304, Houston and the Jets. Houston laying 6 on the road in the Meadowlands. Jets off of that win, and you kind of inadvertently brought up a point that I didn't think about, but now I'm thinking about it a lot. The Jets wanted that game last week, and they are a team with some questionable motivation. Todd Bowles is gone no matter what they do the next 3 weeks. Was that kind of their Super Bowl, and do they sort of regress back now? Or do you think that now with Sam Darnold back, there's a little bit more incentive to play for the future?
Well, I mean, funny thing is, I think you could say, the Houston game was a big game too. And don't sleep on Indianapolis' defense. That was a real physical game. Watson took another beating in that game. Coming off that game, not the best for Houston either. But, yeah, I'm inclined to think, the Jets stepped up. And, listen, the funny thing is if you go inside the game, and I give the Jets full marks, Buffalo was a whisker away from just blowing them out. They got the lead. They're tilting the field on them. And as is always the case with the Bills, they gave up like a 95-yard kickoff return, and then they punched it in. So all of a sudden the game turned on a dime. I mean, the Jets were literally 2 minutes away from getting rolled again, and the Bills let them back in. Then they woke up, and then it turned into a nasty physical game. Maybe they're a tad fat and happy, and the one thing for Houston, probably upset that they let that one get away last week. But all of a sudden, that goofball play down in Miami, here's Houston going, really focus here the rest of the way, because they got a legitimate chance of being the 2 seed and, getting a bye and getting a home game. I mean, there's a lot on the line motivation-wise. There's a ton on the line for Houston, not so much the Jets.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. I mean, now you look at Houston here this weekend playing on Saturday. New England goes to Pittsburgh. We know that's going to be a mean and nasty game in the Steel City on Sunday. Houston picks up this win. Maybe they are in decent shape. Now, they did lose the head-to-head game against New England. But, if they get that one-game lead here and control their own destiny for a bye, that would certainly be a big help, especially when you talk about, as you mentioned, the beating that Deshaun Watson has taken this year. So there's just so much going on in the NFL right now. It's really hard to cover everything, to a full extent. But this is an interesting game because, you have a Houston team here that a lot of people have been looking to fade. Their statistical profile really doesn't stand out in all that impressive of a way. They're +9 in turnover margin. We expect that to regress. Even being +9 in turnover margin, they're only 12th in scoring offense in the NFL. They only have 8 rushing touchdowns this year. They're only 16th in yards per carry. They're a team that has kind of overachieved a little bit. People have been looking to fade them. Now they got that loss, and we're seeing the market fade them again this week. Houston's in an interesting spot, I think, from a betting market standpoint.
Well, and the thing with them, as you sit there and you look at their the course they plotted to get here. First of all, they were like so under the radar with a 9-game winning streak. But it's amazing, one injury, and you're like, wow, really? It meant that much to them, but it really did. They found ways to win, but the Will Fuller injury really hurt this team. Because if you watch on a weekly basis, they're double and triple teaming Hopkins. And nobody else is doing anything. And Houston's success, if you can take what the defense gives you, they have to run the football game. Well, they have in certain instances. They didn't last week. But the Will Fuller injury really hurt Houston because as great as Hopkins is, you know, everybody's kind of turning into Belichick against them. Everybody is trying to take Hopkins out of the equation. And it's up to Houston to find, you know, find some other options. And they've been able to win games, but it ain't pretty, bud.
No, it really isn't. And speaking of not being pretty, the Denver Broncos, I mean, if you're right there in the playoff discussion, you cannot have a no-show like they had against the San Francisco 49ers. Apparently, they just didn't realize that Matt Breida wasn't going to play and didn't realize that George Kittle is really the only guy you had to worry about for this 49ers offense right now because he had over 200 yards in the first half of that game. Broncos suffer a huge loss. Now they got to try and pick up the pieces on a short week to host the Cleveland Browns, who for the first time in what feels like my lifetime, but really about the first time in a decade, actually sort of on the fringes of the playoff race. They're not going to get there, but at least they're an exciting product and they've been a lot more interesting to follow this season. They're only a 3-point underdog on a short week, traveling out to the thin air of Denver in Baker Mayfield's first career start in the Mile High City. And there is an adjustment period for quarterbacks when you talk about the altitude. So this is another one of those lines that kind of stands out to me.
Yeah, right here you got to be Dr. Phil on this one. I mean, what is the Broncos' mindset here? Because literally the door was wide open for them, the Niners. You get the Browns at home. You're at the Raiders. And then at the end, the Chargers' fate may have already been determined, and they may rest people, right? And the door was wide open for Denver to conceivably run the table. It kicked the door down, and then they did that. And I'm telling you, I watched this nonsense from a week-to-week basis. The Barkley kid, how misused he is with the Giants, is beyond the pale to me. They get down to the 3-yard line, first and goal, and they always have Manning in the shotgun, flanked by Barkley, and like, okay, they're going to run it off left guard, and he runs off left guard and gets nothing because they know that's what they're going to do. Why don't you line up in the I formation? The guy can fly over the pile or pick his spot, and they don't do it. And Denver did the same thing last week. The week before, Lindsay had 157 yards rushing, and they get the ball at 3-yard line, and they're throwing every down. Like, what? Who called these plays? Football drives me insane. Just these guys outthink themselves, get too fancy. And how about the Rams? Talk about insane. The Rams game. They get a close football game. They took 2 timeouts when the clock stopped 3 seconds apart in the fourth quarter. I mean, even the Rams, as good as they are, and that coach as good as he is, who does this stuff?
I don't know, man. It's amazing. You know, I've been following the NFL a lot, but, you know, I've been following it a little bit differently here this year. I tend to be a spot kind of guy, as we know from talking about the NHL and all that, but man, the league nowadays is just, it's so much about coaching and scheme and maximizing talent. And I just don't understand. I get you were trailing for most of the game. Okay. I understand that for the Rams, at least for a good part of that game, certainly in the second half. But it is cold. Your quarterback is all over the place. No timing whatsoever. Todd Gurley runs 11 times and you throw 44 times against that Bears defense. Like, what the hell are you thinking? I mean, maybe you're trying to monitor Gurley's workload for the playoffs, and he is a guy that has had some injuries, so maybe that factored in the equation. But I just don't get how somebody like Sean McVay can do that. And then you look at guys like Vance Joseph and the coaching staff in Denver, they're just really bad. So maybe you come to expect things like that, but man, the coaching decisions in this league are just incredible.
I've been saying this, I swear to you, since I was 10. My brother's 11 years older than me. You know, when I was a little kid, I mean, it's been his pet peeve his whole life, and I'm the same way. Timeouts are oxygen tanks. You know, I mean, Aaron Rodgers does it. I mean, guys that should know better. You know, say, it's 3rd and 17. 7 minutes to go in the third quarter. 3rd and 17. Timeout. What? Timeout? You're going to go take the timeout. You're going to come back. You're going to run a draw or a screen. You're going to punt. You don't have a 3rd and 17 play. Kansas City maybe does. They did that 4 times against Baltimore. It's like, take the 5-yard penalty and punt the football. How these guys just don't realize the value of these timeouts. And they can't. And the biggest one is when a team has a 10-point lead and they think they're, take timeout. You know, the other team can't come back and score. How many times, Adam, I watch these games, the team has a 10-point lead, burn 2 timeouts for no good reason, other team scores, now you're down forward 1:05 to go at your own 10, and you got 1 timeout because you squandered 2 for no reason. I shake my head every week, every game.
I mean, I'm watching.
I'm on a soapbox. You want another one?
Go ahead, why not?
This is my other big one. Well, this is my big one. What game was it? Maybe the Atlanta game. It was a 3rd and 2 situation in the first quarter. No, it was the Houston game. It was the Houston game. He was throwing a pass to the flank on 3rd and 2, and the guy, I'm 2,000 miles away and 30 yards from a screen, and I'm like, the guy bobbled the ball. He bobbled the ball 1-2 feet in, he bobbled the ball, and then 1 foot went out. Like, that's incomplete. 2 guys, 2 side judges, 8 feet from it, they both, it's a catch. I'm like, what? It's a catch? It was so blatantly obvious it wasn't a catch. Anyway, so O'Brien challenges it. It's overturned. But I'm sitting there going, in the first quarter on something that there's no way in God's green earth that should have been missed, at the end of the game, what if Houston needs a challenge? And they had a waste of challenge there because of the ineptitude of the officials. I don't care if the games take 20 hours to play. If you keep proving an officiating crew incompetent, why should a team ever run out of challenges? If you're right every time, it's on the crew. Why should the team be penalized?
No, I totally agree. I think that makes a lot of sense.
I feel better. Thank you.
Good. No, you're all good. I'm glad you got that out here today, Brian. Let's go over to the NHL side of things here and some interesting things going on. I know we had somebody tweet at both of us over the weekend about the dad's trip and then that working out. And, you know, I texted you last week about a live betting spot with the Oilers because their dads were on the trip. How about we got a mom's trip here this week? The Toronto Maple Leafs will have their moms in tow in Tampa and in Sunrise this weekend, Thursday and Saturday. You know, that's a huge game there against Tampa Bay. Big game for bragging rights in the Atlantic Division. Now I'm kind of looking at it. Initially, I was kind of thinking, maybe I like Tampa a little bit here. But with the moms on the trip, I can't take Tampa Thursday night. And also, too, you know, the Ducks had one in late November, and they lost to Nashville, but then went to Florida and beat Tampa Bay and the Panthers. Penguins are on the dad's trip. They won last night in Long Island. If a team's got the family on a 2-game trip, and you mentioned this last week, that it's usually a 2-game trip, if they lose that first game, they do not want to go 0-for with mom or dad in town.
That's true. And the weird thing about the Toronto one you're telling me, they're in Carolina tonight, and they're on a 4-game road trip. So I've never heard of this one because it's always a 2-game hop. So I don't know if they're flying the moms down there to meet them.
That's weird. Here's what I saw. I guess there's like a mom's watch party for the Carolina game tonight, and then they're going to charter the moms down to Florida for Thursday's game.
Okay. So now last week we had Edmonton went 2-0, Calgary went 2-0, and God bless social media and how big a thing this is. The hard part is finding out, sitting here minding my own business on the weekend, and the Rangers tweet out a picture of the Delta Airlines actually tweeted it out. The dad's on the plane with the Rangers flying to play, and they were plus $1.70. Saturday night down in Florida, and Lundqvist stood on his head in a shootout, and the Rangers won plus $1.70. Then played Tampa last night. They were plus 210. Said, boy, that's a bad spot. Plus the Rangers got the first win. But I know I was telling people on the weekend, know this, the Rangers are putting all their eggs in this Florida basket because they know they got a tiger by the tail, and they don't want to go 0-2 on this trip. So the Florida one, it was a nail-biter, but it got there. This is one of the greatest betting angles in the history of sports wagering, period.
Yeah, it's really good. And when you talk about, you know, like you said, if it's a two-game swing, and the team's going to be a dog in both of those games, like the Rangers were going to be down there in Florida, I mean, play them both. You know, you're going to probably wind out, you're going to wind up splitting and, you know, taking a little bit of profit with the big plus money price. So, you know, Tampa or Toronto here, on the other hand, they'll be a dog against Tampa Bay on Thursday. They should be a favorite against Florida on Saturday, as long as everybody gets through that Tampa game healthy. But man, you got to keep that angle in mind. Very, very interesting there with the mom's trip, which maybe in some respect, I don't know. I mean, I don't know which one's a better angle between the moms or the dads.
Same,
but
one, same thing.
They're both good. They're both very, very good.
Same thing. The moms may be even bigger because they're, I know one team did it a couple years ago and they went 2-0. I mean, mostly it's the dads, but the moms, hey, the moms, the dads, whoever. The moms, let's cut to the chase. The odds are the moms, probably more often than not, were the ones that got up at 5:30 in the morning and took the kids to the rink. It may be even bigger with the moms.
Yeah, I know for me it was both of my parents. And, you know, I mean, I imagine a lot of NHL guys have similar stories. And, you know, I mean, it's such a good angle. I mean, I don't think we can overstate how good of an angle it is.
The funny thing is, you know, the dads, I mean, the dads go out and howl at the moon. And
oh, yeah.
So you got to be leery of, you know, like, because I think, you know, Vancouver come in here and won, right? And the players went to bed. The dads went out and howled at the moon. Players came in here. Vancouver walked into Vegas and won. But the funny thing is with the moms, you can see these guys are on the, it's the mom's trip, and the moms are telling the players the night before the game, go to bed. You know, the dads are going to go out and have pops with them.
Yeah, it's such a fun, I love that the NHL does that. I love a lot of the things that the NHL does, but I love that NHL teams do that. It's definitely something that I'm sure the players enjoy, and obviously it's good for us from a betting standpoint as well. One game I do want to ask you about here tonight, Brian, Edmonton and Colorado, game 61-62, the last one on the board. Edmonton off of playing Calgary on Sunday. I know you said you had that spot circled given how the first game went between the two teams. You looking to fade the Oilers tonight?
It was a great game, by the way. It wasn't kind of the bloodbath that the first one was, but it was played at a real high level. You know, Hitchcock's doing something with these guys. He's got their attention. They're on a three-game winning streak. This Colorado team is coming off a lot. I think it's a good game. It's not one that's on my radar, to be honest with you, but I think it's going to be a really good hockey game. I think at the moment you could believe in both teams, you know? And so to me, it's one you sit back and enjoy. But Colorado's the real deal, and if they stay healthy, they're going to be good for the long haul here. And Hitchcock has really shored things up. The matchup, the weird thing is, you know, from a pace of play perspective, these are two fast teams. The difference with Edmonton from one year to the next, hockey ain't that hard to figure out. You know, it's like show up, give a big effort, defense, or show up with a good effort, and then it's goaltending and special teams. Well, you know the difference? One of the big differences, they tighten things up on their own end, but Edmonton is finally getting serviceable goaltending. I mean, Talbot couldn't stop a medicine ball last year. You know, the Koskinen kid, he's playing great.
All right, so we'll talk about the Christmas break here on next week's show because that's 2 weeks from yesterday. Obviously, Christmas 2 weeks from today. So the NHL dark for 3 days then. We'll talk about that betting angle next week. Real quickly here, Brian, before I let you go, college football bowl season starts on Saturday. I believe the next game after that is Tuesday then. Any general overview points you want to make on the bowl season real quick to wrap things up?
Our video that we're going to get to you later today will focus on Saturday's ball games. But it's a unique dynamic. I mean, you got the Las Vegas Bowl, and their star wide receiver, Harry's not going to play. And there are about eight guys that are basically saying, you know, big-time players. Greer with West Virginia, I'm going the draft. I'm not playing. Then you got interim coaches. You got an interim coach in the Tulane-Louisiana game. You got to look at the coaches, the motivation. This is really – and then you look at coaches, who's good with extra time to prepare. I know right out of the gate, I'm going, you're giving me 3-4 weeks with Patterson and TCU to prepare for a team as bad as they've been. I like the coach. I think you want to watch. It happens every year. If the MAC has always struggled in bowl games, but if a conference is playing overachieving in a couple early bowl games, maybe it flatters teams from a certain conference down the road. There's a lot of horse racing mentality in here in terms of the company you keep. It's like March Madness. You know, is the conference playing well? Are they all getting upset and knocked off, or are they pulling off the upsets? And if a couple teams in a conference are doing well, it flatters the conference. And why not use it as at least a starting point, or at least refer to it in a future game?
Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. How can people find those two shows, Brian?
Okay, Adam, thanks, man. You can follow me on Twitter at Brian Blessing. The show, Sportsbook Radio, Vegas Hockey Hotline, noon to 2 Pacific time, KSHP.com. And there's an app, KSHP Las Vegas. Shows are archived at SportsbookRadio.com. And today we're going to be getting you some videos on what we're anticipating from a line movement perspective on the NHL or the NFL in the home stretch. But we'll focus on Saturday's bowl games because I think there are a lot of little hidden nuggets as we get bowl season started this Saturday. Not a lot of marquee games, Bud, but I'm telling you, I think there are a lot of goodies in here that make a lot of sense. And we'll talk about those on a video that we'll be getting to you today at bangthebook.com.
Brian Blessing, Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Outline, the shows at Brian Blessing on Twitter. Appreciate the time as always, Brian. Thank you so much, man. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, Adam, always a pleasure, my friend. Have a good day.
There's Brian Blessing again, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. And keep an eye out on our YouTube page, both for my video today, our Tuesday 3-pack, and then also a couple of those videos there from Brian. We'll shift gears to a much different type of playing surface, from the ice to the hardwood, with Philip Rostenreich from OrlandoMagicDaily.com. Philip,
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing very well, bud. Good to chat with you again here. It's been a little while. How'd your summer go?
Summer went well. I mean, keeping busy, finding stuff to do, just waiting for basketball season to start, and now we're in the grind, so to speak.
Well, and not a bad start to the basketball season here for your Orlando Magic. We'll chat about that a little bit later in the segment here, but let's take an overall look here at the Eastern Conference to start things off, Philip, because with LeBron James out of the picture, it's pretty wide open at this point in time. And the top five teams, Raptors, Bucks, Sixers, Pacers, and the Boston Celtics, all within four games there of the top spot, within four games of each other from a standing standpoint. Boston has won six in a row, so we'll touch on them a little bit more in a second. But how do you sort of expect this thing to shake out? I mean, everyone's played 27, 28 games now to this point. What do you think? I mean, who is your front runner right now in the East?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the cream is starting to rise to the top here in the Eastern Conference. But I think Toronto has been the clear favorite. They've been the most consistent team out of all those top teams. Boston's kind of coming on a little bit lately. But the Raptors have been, you know, essentially the same reliable, dominant Raptors team that they have been for the last few years, even with a new coach, even with Kawhi Leonard instead of DeMar DeRozan. And of course, there's still the potential for them to continue to get better. This is just a Raptors team that scores at a really high rate and defends really, really well, just like they did last year. I mean, I think the questions will remain about Toronto, whether they can perform in the playoffs, which has been their problem for so long. And of course, Kawhi Leonard has to stay healthy, after missing almost all of last season. But the Raptors have clearly kind of moved themselves as the class of the Eastern Conference at the moment.
Well, and when you look at the home road splits here in the Eastern Conference, this is one that really stands out to me. And something that I think helps Toronto long term. I mean, obviously it's a fairly small sample size here, but 10-3 on the road, the only team in the NBA with 10 road wins here so far. Why are they so good on the road?
I mean, I think it's just a – I think more than a lot of the other elite teams, than most of the other elite teams, they haven't had a lot of disruption. You know, outside of bringing in Kawhi Leonard, it's still virtually the same roster as last year. I mean, even Nick Nurse was an assistant coach with them. So they have a new coach, but they don't really have a new coach, it feels like. So, you know, when you're going out on the road, when you don't have the comforts of home, when you don't – you know, when you have adversity going against you, having a comfort factor – matters. I mean, if you can just feel a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more in sync with everyone else, you're going to play a little bit better. And Toronto, I think, certainly take advantage of that early in the season to kind of race ahead of the rest of the pack.
The Milwaukee Bucks here got off to a very, very nice start, leveled off a little bit, but now they're kind of picking it back up. Some couple straight wins here for them. 16 home games against 10 road games so far, 13-3 at home, just 5-5 on the road. But Philip, the Bucks made a trade earlier this week with the Cavaliers. Is that something that helps them long term?
You know, I think that deal was done more to clear up some cap room for the future. I mean, I think Milwaukee knows that their time to strike is coming very soon. I mean, Giannis Antetokounmpo is entering his prime, is playing a lot of really good stuff, working with Mike Budenholzer as their head coach. They're really taking some major steps forward. But I think they also know that you know, they got to be able to plan for their future. And so I felt like that deal that they made was as much about planning for the future and kind of keep not, you know, destroying anything they have now. I don't think they gave up a whole lot, but they didn't really, you know, bring in a whole lot in either. So they're definitely looking to try and get the team better in the short term. But I think that deal was more about clearing some room for the long term so they can add pieces and hopefully take another step in the next few years.
The Sixers, they're tied for second right now with the Bucks, although they have played two more games than Milwaukee has. Philadelphia 14-1 at home, just 5-8 away from home. Is this because they've kind of picked and choose their spots with Joel Embiid? You know, what do you think it is for the Sixers why they have such a big home road dichotomy here?
I mean, I think you see that with a lot of young teams. And while they do have Jimmy Butler and they have had some playoff success, really just 1 year playoff success, this is still a really young team. And not only that, this is a team that is still figuring out its rotation, and it doesn't have the same level of depth that they had last year. I mean, I think a really underrated move that Philadelphia did, or a move that's had a kind of an underrated impact, was their loss of Ersan Ilyasova. He was a glue guy for that team. He did all the kind of little dirty things that a winning team needs someone to do, and did it without complaint, did it without needing a lot of shots. And I think they really missed that presence. You know, they're relying still on a lot of young guys, a lot of guys who have been through the ringer once, but haven't been through it so many times. And I think a little bit of a step back was a little bit expected. Then you add in Jimmy Butler, who has really changed a lot of what Philadelphia has done. You know, you're hearing that Joel Embiid isn't happy with his touches or wants to do more with the touches that he's getting. You know, it doesn't seem like he's disrupting anything or complaining too much. He's more upset at himself. But in any case, he's not happy with how he's playing and the role that he's playing. You still got a team that's figuring a lot of things out. And so you add a team that doesn't have the same quality of depth that they had last year, especially on the road, you're going to see them struggle a little bit.
So the Indiana Pacers here, Victor Oladipo missing his 11th straight game, and they've won four in a row. They're in fourth place. So right now they're above the cutoff for home court in the first round. You really have to be encouraged with what the Pacers are doing without Oladipo here. What do they look like when he comes back? I mean, is this a top three, top four caliber team?
It certainly feels that way. It certainly feels that they could be in that top group. I mean, I would still put Toronto, Boston, and Philadelphia ahead of them. I probably still leave Milwaukee ahead of them. So Indiana's got its work cut out for it to get home court advantage. It's certainly a long, long season. And the Pacers have had a lot of role players play really, really well. The big difference, though, for Indiana so far this year has been Miles Turner. Last year, Turner did not live up to the promise of his rookie year, for sure. It's been kind of 2 years where he's really struggled in a lot of ways. But he has really emerged this year as a really strong defender and paint protector. And that changes a lot of what Indiana can do defensively. And their defense is the reason why they're still winning games without Victor Oladipo, because they don't have all the offensive weapons, obviously, that Oladipo can provide. Tyreke Evans has struggled a little bit for them. But Bojan Bogdanovic has been good. Miles Turner, again, has started scoring a little bit more. They're getting some good contributions off the bench. You just got a lot of – I mean, it's sort of like the L.A. Clippers out west. They have a lot of guys who are just good basketball players. They're not going to blow you away with talent. They got the one elite guy maybe in Victor Oladipo, but they're not going to blow you away with their talent. They're just going to constantly send waves of good players at you, so you've got to be on your toes and playing at a high level at all points of the game. There's no break. And that's really, I think, what's helped buoyed Indiana's success while Oladipo's been out. They just have a lot of really good players who are playing very, very well right now.
Well, and as you look at the Eastern Conference futures odds here, Toronto plus 185 to win the conference and go to the finals, Boston plus 205, Milwaukee plus 520, Philadelphia plus 535, and then Indiana is next at plus 3250. So more than a 30-1 shot here to win the Eastern Conference. So it does seem like the odds maker is certainly in line with you that the Pacers probably just don't have the horses right now to be a legitimate contender here in the Eastern Conference. So let's talk about the Boston Celtics. Six in a row for them. They go from 10-10 to 16-10. The optics of that look a whole hell of a lot different than a 500 record. Have they figured it out? Has Brad Stevens cracked the code of this team, or are there still some problems here?
I think it was always with Boston, a little bit of them figuring it out. They have been so good and so resilient when they're facing injuries that, you know, they're adding in a lot of talented players who are used to playing a very specific way, and it takes a little adjustment to get there. I mean, Kyrie Irving, very ball dominant. While he can move the ball and works the spot up game, he wants his ISOs. He's going to slow the game down a little bit and try and break guys down off the dribble. Gordon Hayward, coming back from injury, I think they to some extent rushed him back a little bit too quickly and putting him in the starting lineup and kind of playing him with the starting group rather than maybe slowly bringing him into their fold and letting some of the other guys who really helped them last year kind of take over those minutes and then slowly ramping up Hayward as he gets better and improves. I think they finally found that sweet spot with all of those guys offensively because their defense has been good all year long. They've been probably the top team in the league in defensive rating for most of the season. I think they're still, if they're not the top team, they're still in the top five pretty easily. They just couldn't score. Their offense just couldn't figure itself out. And so now we're starting, I think, to see Boston get into a rhythm offensively, figure out the roles that their various guys need to play, and continue to grow from there. And that's obviously a big sign for the Celtics. I don't think there was ever a ton of panic about them. I don't believe that anyone really thought, oh, Boston's in trouble. They're 10-10. I mean, I think there was some talk about that, but this is a veteran group. Brad Stevens has been around this team for a while. You know, they know it's a marathon. They were waiting for a moment like this to kind of take control of their record, and they're probably in it for the long haul because when you have a defense as good as Boston's, you're going to have a chance to win a lot of games.
So if you had to look at it now, and Boston's played 26 games, Toronto's played 28, is that your Eastern Conference final? I mean, would you be surprised to see any other matchup?
I would not be surprised if that's the Eastern Conference final. I'd give Philadelphia a puncher's chance to get in there. I think Philadelphia is a team that's built a little bit more for the playoffs than maybe Boston is to some extent. Because in the playoff, in the regular season, depth matters a lot. You're not going to be able to play all your players 82 games, 35 minutes a game. That's just not going to happen. In the playoffs, you start to see those rotations get shorter. Depth starts to matter a little bit less. You need your role players just to step up in big moments. But, you don't need to go 10 guys deep. You don't need to go 9 guys deep in the playoffs. And I think that's where Philadelphia might have a little bit of an advantage over Boston. Now, Boston has kind of had Philadelphia's number a little bit for the past few years, so I'd still bet Boston over Philadelphia. But the advantages that Boston has and has displayed over the last few years, I think some of those go away as you get a little bit deeper into the playoffs, and it just becomes about, can your best players beat the other team's best players?
So as people notice here, we've got teams from the Atlantic and teams from the Central all in the top six. The first team from the Southeast Division, the Charlotte Hornets, who are 13-13, and if the season ended today, and I'm sure you wish it did, Philip, the Orlando Magic would make it into the playoffs as the 8th seed here. They have dropped 3 in a row, though, to go from 12-12 to 12-15. So, I mean, someone from the Southeast is going to have to make the playoffs, probably two someones, given where the Nets, Knicks, and the rest of the conference is. So who are those teams going to be from the East? I mean, the Wizards have a ton of issues. Miami you know, we'll see if they can get things squared away, but they're only 5-12 against the East here so far. Who winds up winning this division, and who may be the eighth seed?
Yeah, the Southeast Division is it's going to be interesting, but probably for a lot of the wrong reasons. It's a little bit of a race to the bottom. You know, those four teams that you mentioned, Miami, Washington, Charlotte, Orlando, are all bunched up from 7 to, I think, 10 in the standings, or 7 to 11 in the standings. So if you're looking for classic NBA divisional battles that used to matter but don't matter so much anymore, this division is going to be – going to be a war for a lot of the season. I don't think Charlotte's going to be much better than 500. They're certainly looking like the best team of the bunch. They've probably got the best, or at least the second best player in the division in Kemba Walker. I think Washington is going to make a run too and make a push. Although they have a lot of internal problems, that is still a really talented team. Bradley Beal, just won Eastern Conference Player of the Week, is playing fantastic, playing at an all-star level. And John Wall, of course, is sitting there too, who's a very, very good player as well. Orlando has been a bit of a surprise this year, even at 12-15. They have been playing at a very high level. They've been competing a lot harder. And, you know, there's certainly a belief here in Orlando that this is a group that can break through and be in the playoff conversation, if not make the playoffs outright. And, you know, you never count out Miami. As much as Miami has struggled this year, and like you said, has a poor Eastern Conference record, it feels like they're on shakier ground than usual. That team always finds a way to stay in the conversation. So you've got four, and no offense to Atlanta, Atlanta's kind of rebuilding. It's really the only team that's outright rebuilding at this point, not really in the playoff conversation. But you've got those four teams in this division. They're going to be battling for those last two playoff spots. Obviously, one of them has to get in. Is guaranteed at least the 8 seed, but it's going to be a battle between those four teams. They all have flaws. They all have reasons why they can be successful, but it's going to be a really hard battle for all four. They're going to go through their ups and downs. There's going to be a lot of shifting at the bottom of the Eastern Conference standings, and someone's going to end up getting those spots, and maybe the team that gets hot in April.
Now, you look at Orlando here on the season, 15-12 against the spread, but 17-10 to the under. So based on what I'm looking at here, Philip, and maybe you can confirm this as somebody who follows the team religiously, 17-10 to the under. Looks like they've committed to playing defense, and they're actually following through with it.
Yeah, they're playing defense a lot better than they have in the past. They're still a middling defense. There's still definitely a lot they can do. But, you know, Steve Clifford with Charlotte was known for his defense. That's what he got the Hornets to do, the Bobcats and then the Hornets to do. And that really helped turn that whole franchise around and got them into playoff contention and into more serious playoff conversations every single year, even if they didn't meet that benchmark every year. Defense has been a big thing for Orlando. It's the reason why they're more competitive than they usually are. But really what I think is more interesting is the Magic's offense, when it's been good, has been really, really good. Before this three-game losing streak, the Magic, from November 2nd or November 4th through a few weeks ago, had one of the top 10 offenses in the league, which you wouldn't think with the kind of weapons that they have. Nikola Vucevic was putting up near triple-doubles on a nearly nightly basis for a little while there. They have a really dynamic offense when they execute it well. The problem is they don't always execute it well. And a part of the reason why I think the Magic have hit the under a few times is they've laid a few duds. Last night, particularly against the Dallas Mavericks, they lost 101-76, so it was their lowest offensive output of the season. Before that, they played the Indiana Pacers and scored only 90. So this is kind of a hot and cold offense. When they're really hot, they're really good. When they're really cold, they're really bad. And their defense is good enough to keep them in games when the offense is working, but it's not good enough to keep them in games on its own. And I think that's one of the big issues that the Magic have to figure out now as they get into the meat of their season.
Well, we'll shift over to the Western Conference here. Game 531-532 tonight is Portland taking on Houston. Portland, pretty decent team. They've had a couple of bumps in the road here over the last couple of weeks. The Rockets are 11-14. They're 14th in the Western Conference right now, and yet they're a 6.5-point favorite. So obviously what's happening here in the betting market is that you have to respect the talent level of Houston, but they're just not playing up to that capability right now. Philip, what is wrong with the Houston Rockets?
You know, the big thing with Houston, it's not their offense. They while Chris Paul and James Harden aren't playing at the same level that they were playing at last year, that is still a really potent and dangerous offensive team. What's different about this year is their defense has fallen completely off a cliff. The reason why the Rockets had the best record in the league last season, where we're, you know, inches away from the NBA Finals and beating the Golden State Warriors, was their defense was one of the very best defenses in the entire league. That's how they generated a lot of their offense. That's how they got out in transition. That's how they created a lot of the mismatches that, you know, made James Harden MVP. You know, they weren't isolating. They weren't having to execute in the half court. They were able to flow freely into that Mike D'Antoni offense. When you don't get stops, you have to start against set defenses and run your half court stuff. And that's never going to be as efficient as getting out in transition and doing secondary transition breaks. Houston losing Trevor Ariza, losing Luka Bamute, were huge blows to this team. I don't think people gave them the credit that maybe they deserve for Houston's success. But trading them in for Carmelo Anthony and James Ennis is a huge step down. And obviously Carmelo Anthony is not really playing for them anymore, although I think he's still on the roster. It may have bolstered their offense. It may have looked good to add to an already potent offense, but the difference between Houston teams that have competed for the championship, whether it was in the Dwight Howard era or the Chris Paul era, and the teams that struggle to meet those expectations, has always been the team's defense. And that's always been a problem in D'Antoni's time in Houston, is when they are unable to play defense, they're a middle-of-the-road West team. And unfortunately in the West, middle-of-the-road puts you at 14th in the West because it's so competitive out there. If Houston can figure out their defense, they'll have a chance. They'll be a good team again. But, you know, they're obviously not going to be on that breakneck they were on last year. And I think most people are kind of counting them out and writing them off as far as challenging the Warriors again this year.
Well, the Warriors right now, and I'm pulling this from Five Dimes, minus 260 to win the West implies about a little more than 72% chance that they win it. I think it's higher than that, personally. The Lakers are second at plus 1150. The Rockets, despite all the problems, still third in the odds, plus 1275. So that's the question here, Philip. With the personnel that they have, can they fix this thing, or do they need to be really active on the trade market, you know, before the playoffs roll around?
You know, I think they can fix this thing. They've obviously got the talent. I mean, and as much as James Harden and Chris Paul have struggled, Clint Capella is still playing really, really good. And you know, they've got the pieces still to play defense, maybe not at the level that they had last year, but certainly to continue playing defense. What I'm more worried about with Houston is that their response will be to double down on offense. It'll be to double down on adding more scores. You know, I think I've heard them, you know, be in the running for some of the offensive players that are going to hit the trade market. What Houston really needs is to find two-way players and to find defenders, to find gritty defenders who, you know, can hit an open three, but are in there more to muck the game up a little bit and make life harder for opposing wings and opposing players. And that's tougher to find on the trade market because those guys are so valuable. If Houston goes to the trade market looking to add offense, I think they'll still be in trouble. I don't think they'll solve very much. If they go into the trade market looking actively for perimeter defending and wing defense, they'll be in better shape. Maybe when Brandon Knight comes back, he can provide a little bit of that. They still have him on the shelf waiting to come back from injury. But it still feels like Houston has to find defense. They have to find perimeter defense if they want to get back to their elite level. And just frankly, they're not there yet.
Now, one of the teams that you touched on a little bit earlier, team that the Magic just played, Dallas Mavericks. They are 14-11 here, and I think that what Dallas is doing this season and really what they've done over the last 10 games, winning 7 of 10, I think it sort of underscores here, you know, what one really special player can mean in the NBA, and Dallas certainly has that now in Luka Doncic. So is this a sustainable team? I mean, can they actually be somebody that crashes this playoff party, or are they just kind of riding the wave right now?
You know, I will never doubt Rick Carlisle. I think a lot of the credit should go to him in figuring out how to get the most out of this team, especially on the defensive end. They had their issues very early on in the season. They looked like one of the worst teams in the league as everyone projected early on in the season. And then they kind of hit a groove. You know, Luka Doncic figured things out a lot quicker in the NBA than I think a lot of people thought. You know, Harrison Barnes has been fairly consistent all year. DeAndre Jordan, you know, began accepting his role and playing a lot better, especially on the defensive end. I was looking at their staff profile getting ready for the game last night, and they're just a kind of delightfully average team. I think they're 15th in offensive rating, 13th in defensive rating. That's going to leave them in a lot of games. They're going to compete. They're going to be there, and that's what you expect from a Rick Carlisle coach team. I mean, I think Carlisle for a long time has been one of the top at least 10, if not 5 coaches in the league. He just always seems to get the most out of his team. The big thing with Dallas is while they do have a nice bench and they have a lot of young, energetic guys providing a lot of depth, if their big players aren't playing well, and that includes Doncic, you know, they're going to struggle a little bit, especially in that West. So it wouldn't surprise me if they fade a little bit. You know, their young team, Doncic is, you know, has played a professional season before, but not anything really like this. So he's going through a nice stretch now. And yeah, he'll win Rookie of the Year. I'm not taking anything away from him, but it's a long season. Every rookie hits the wall at some point. You know, I think Luka will certainly hit the wall at some point, and kind of his play will dip up and down for a little bit, which you expect from rookies. I was the guy who was telling everyone, I don't get why the Suns weren't taking him number one. He was my clear number one pick during the draft process. You know, you just don't see guys dominate professionals at his age the way that he did and still get better. And I think he's proven that in the NBA so far. But, you know, this is a team that I think still pretty, you know, still has some young guys and still has a lot of young guys they're relying on. So I think they'll go through some ups and downs. Right now they're going through a big upswing, so ride it while you can. And then we'll see how they recover when they do eventually hit some adversity and hit some struggles.
Dallas' season win total 34.5 coming into the year, already 14 wins for them. And to wrap this thing up, Philip, I want to talk about a couple of teams that were in a similar bucket coming into the season. That would be the Los Angeles Clippers, whose season win total opened 35.5 at the Westgate in Las Vegas, closed 37.5, and the Memphis Grizzlies, who opened 34.5, closed 33.5 out there. Both of those teams right now above the cut line for the playoffs, both of them playing very well. The Clippers in particular, are these two teams that are in it for the long haul now? Are they going to overachieve what some of their preseason projections were?
You know, I think both will overachieve their preseason projections just because, especially with Memphis, the reason why Memphis was in the lottery last year was simply because Mike Conley and Marc Gasol were hurt. They're two best players. And a lot of what Memphis does relies on them. They need both of them playing if they want to compete. And when they are, you know, they're definitely a borderline playoff team. You can't ignore them. It's just a matter of whether they can stay healthy or not. And obviously they've been really healthy. Jaren Jackson Jr. has been a real big boost as a rookie. So, you know, they definitely have a lot working for them, and they're playing very, very well right now. I don't think they'll last as much as the Clippers will. You know, kind of like I said with one of the earlier teams we talked about, the Clippers just have a lot. Talked about the Pacers. The Clippers just have a lot of really good players, and not only that, they had Tobias Harris take another step up in his game, where you know he's looking like an all-star this year, and averaging scoring close to 30 points on the regular. But they do a really good job sharing and moving the ball. They have a lot of depth. Their bench is very, very strong. So they'll be able to withstand some injuries and withstand some problems here. Do they have that one guy that's going to take over a game late? No, but that's not who they are. They're very sharing the ball type of team. They move the ball particularly well. Again, they have depth that they can keep coming at you in waves, and so they'll have a chance to win a lot of games. You know, I don't know if the Clippers are going to be one of the top seeds in the West like they are now, but they absolutely should feel like they are a playoff team with the way that they've played so far this season, and that should be a goal of theirs this year.
Philip Rosenreich from OrlandoMagicDaily.com. What do you guys got going on over there right now, man?
You know, we are getting set for the Magic's trip to Mexico City, but we're in the midst of the playoff race and all the philosophical questions that brings up. You know, a lot of fans have been scarred over the last 6 years here. I don't know if you've heard that they've been pretty bad. And so everyone's trying to measure what the success is so far this year and whether this is sustainable for the Magic. So, you know, we're keeping a close eye on the team on that front, keeping a close eye on the standings. And, of course, as I'm sure you know, the trade market really opens up on Saturday. And so rumor season is getting set to begin in the NBA, and I'm sure the Magic will be very involved in a lot of rumors with a couple of expiring contracts that teams might be interested in as the season moves on.
Well, I definitely encourage everyone to follow Philip on Twitter as well. All right, OrlandoMagicDaily.com. Good to get you back on the program here, buddy. Good to chat some NBA with you. Hopefully we'll do it again real soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime you need me, just give me a call.
All right, there you go. There's Philip Rosenreich from OrlandoMagicDaily.com. Good to chat with him. Love that overview there of the NBA, and in particular, the Eastern and the Western Conference pictures here, because again, you want to start looking at the sustainability of some of these teams, especially, you know, as we head into that point in time where a lot of people say that, you know, the season starts around Christmas. I don't think that's true, especially with the earlier start here this year. But obviously, you want to be taking stock and evaluating these teams as we go forward. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Banging Book Radio, we'll should be able to get Brian Leonard back on the program again. I think he's back in town now, so we should be able to chat with him about college football and the NFL, and then also chat with Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds the number one on Twitter. If I can't get any either one of those guys, we'll figure something else out for tomorrow's show. But then Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment for Week 15, and Brent from DSI Sportsbook for this week's version of the Odds Report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.